Chapter 6. Darrow. Mortal Concerns. Like a deep space remora, the Archimedes stirs from its idle drift and creeps into the wake of the convoy of Votum Cosmos haulers. The haulers are accompanied by powerful destroyers freshly painted with a purple minotaur's head. After journeying from the Marcher to Venusian orbit, we waited days for a convoy whose wake could mask our approach to the dockyards. It gave us time to plan. Thus far, the stealth hull has allowed us to avoid two Carthii patrol squadrons, but the dockyards, with their far more sophisticated sensor suites, will be a different affair. I lean over Cassius's shoulder as he guides the Archimedes closer to the hull of a Cosmos hauler at the end of the convoy.
"Easy, does it? The blind spot isn't large," I murmur.
"I know how to fly," Cassius says. "If you want to worry about anything, worry about the hull."
"Considering the only way we'll know if they've spotted us is if they shoot at us, perhaps you should both focus,"
Ori says from the co-pilot seat. I sit down in a pop-out seat behind them and hold my breath until we've matched speed with the hauler, a bare 10 meters from her starboard. Cassius breathes out.
"There. We're in her shadow. Quicksilver must hate you, Darrow, or he's working for the Golds. Why else would he not equip the White Fleet with this tech? 5 destroyers with this hull could cut apart this society like a scalpel."
"Apparently the material is 100 times more expensive per ounce than razors are to produce," I say. "Outfitting the Morning Star alone would have bankrupted the Republic." "So, that's what I said." He laughs. "No wonder the Senate didn't like you." In the blind spot of the hauler, I have time to appreciate the view as we approach Venus. At a distance, the dockyards of Venus, the greatest structure ever built by mankind, resemble little more than a scratch on a sapphire marble suspended alone in the darkness. If ever I needed a reminder for how small we are in the scheme of things, I needn't look any further than Venus. Yet even Venus itself, a planet of immense majesty with all its vast coral reefs, mysterious migrating islands, abundant flora and fauna, rigid caste structure, and human factories for the Gold military apparatus, is smaller than my pinky nail when I hold my hand at arm's length. As we approach and Venus grows in size, there's time enough for the worry to set in. Soon the Carthii Navy comes into view. Most of the ships and praetors of House Carthii were off serving Atalantia over Mercury when Apollonia stole their dockyards. Now their ships are tethered to the north pole of their home planet, where they twinkle, a crown of blue splinters.
No doubt they're tethered there by fear of what Apollonius would do to their dockyards should they try to reclaim them. If I were him, I'd have bombs and a dead man's switch. He and I often do think alike.
I reach over to the seat beside me and pet Dominus Portobello, our lone atomic, for reassurance. Under watch of the station's guns and its escorts, the haulers slow as they approach the dockyards. So does the Archimedes. Amongst the yard's complex fortifications are guns the size of skyscrapers. If death comes, we won't have long to notice. With a tentative smile that grows the longer we don't die, Cassius cuts the engines and initiates a lateral drift out of the hauler's wake. The dockyards roll past, endless fortifications and industrial towers, spindles and garages as far as the eye can see. Ori is amazed at the sight. Cassius grows dour.
"Good news. We're not dead yet," I say, and stand. "Bad news, that was the easy part. Ori, the Archimedes and Portobello is yours. Cassius, it's time. Remember what I taught you about axial drift, and don't forget 2 port thrusters are wonky," Cassius says to Ori, reluctant to hand over the controls.
"I won't crash if you don't die," she replies, and gives him a smile.
He glances around at the ship, his home, takes a breath, and heads for the garage.
I linger for a moment and watch her fingers dance along the controls to the ship's systems.
Did Cassius actually teach you to fly, or did you just pretend to let him?
She continues her task.
It is a master's nature to want, just as it is a servant's nature to provide. This does not mean the master does not provide. This does not mean a servant does not want.
So you humored him.
She turns.
I am a pink. I humor everyone.
She doesn't sound bitter about it.
We all have our survival mechanisms, Dara. I am and always have been air. Until now, you could afford to be a rock. You didn't have to change or alter course. Now you are cracking. That is a good thing. If you wish to be repaired,
you must first be broken, my mama.
She had seen me reading the book in the Archimedes lounge.
It's nonsensical half the time.
Of course it is. All your life, your hands have been how you have interacted with the world. But the path isn't a tool to be grabbed and used, Darrow. Because it isn't a thing, it is a verb.
She holds my gaze, patient, neutral.
Why are you really here, Ori? I ask. Cassius may buy the sympathizer story. You might explain your skills as part of a Hetera's education, but
I am here for Sevro, she says. That is the truth. Not the whole truth, but it is all the truth that matters, because it is all the truth that is useful.
And I suppose the path would tell me to accept that.
You tell me.
She smirks.
Do you really have a choice?
I nod to Dominus Portobello. Make sure you put that where it counts.
She salutes. I head for the cargo bay.
Cassius is already half-dressed. It took us 2 days of work in the machine shop to reshape the Sun Industries armor Kavak sent with Cassius to look like the Spartan Baroque-styled pulse armor of a House Wrath knight. Now grey and purple, detailed with bulls and Hercules on the shoulders, our guises should do the trick.
Don't worry, I taught her well, Cassius says. She's a natural.
I'm sure, I say.
When we are dressed, I check my chronometer.
90 seconds. Button up.
We don our helmets.
A chill trickles over my skin as I see the world through the pulse armor lenses. Even if I loathe war, my body thrills to its rituals like a drunk hearing the clink of ice into a whiskey tumbler.
With Cassius armored and ready beside me, I feel infused with the luck of House Mars, 16 again, and preparing to steal the enemy standard.
We take our places at the starboard door, and he pats my back.
Not to butt, Bologna. Don't be shy.
The jump light turns red to yellow.
I'd rather not. Cassius, we rehearse this, yet my objections remain. If anything, you should hop on my back. You look like the warning advert for street drugs. No offense.
It's Howler protocol on lateral pair jumps. If our equipment fails, you and I can't get separated, I say. I shove the traction gun into his hands.
Now get on my back.
He climbs on my back, muttering,
Let's go to war with the Reaper of Mars, I thought. Truly, I envisioned something far more glamorous.
Ori triggers the door. The faint iridescence of the pulse field is all that separates us from space now.
We are close enough to distinguish viewports and doors in the metal landscape of the dockyards. With danger ahead, but my life in my hands, I come alive again. It feels good to have my boots unstuck from the mud. I steel myself and jump. The dockyards roll beneath us as our initial push carries Cassius and me toward them. Then the velocity we inherited from the Archimedes sends us laterally along the curve of the eastern construction crescent. As we float above the dockyards, it's like watching the construction process in reverse. First, we pass over destroyers and torch ships, complete and lacking only paint.
Then we see ships without guns, then without hulls, then without engines, until finally we pass over machines welding vast sections of durosteel for the superstructures of warships.
Workers, as tiny and numerous as ants, crawl along the surface of the warships and dockyards under the gaze of inanimate overlords, giant statues of deceased Carthii.
When we reach the Vulcan mouth, we pass under the gaze of Selenius and Carthus, colossal caryatids that glare at us from either side of the mouth. These statues are the last sight retired ships see before they are melted down inside a furnace named for the Roman god of the forge. Selenius and Carthus, heedless of our pathetic mortal concerns, witness to the march of time, sneer past us toward the stars. And then, 15 minutes after our jump, we reach our fire point. Careful not to throw off our trajectory, Cassius aims and fires the traction gun over my shoulder at the station. A counterforce exits out the back of the gun. We will spin a little until the payload locks on the surface of the station and the line goes taut. The motor in the gun pulls us forward. On the surface, we abandon the gun, and Cassius uses the base of a heavy railgun installation to climb off my back. He shot well. We're only 80 meters from our target. We cross carefully, pulling ourselves along the toes of Selenius. As a battered Republic destroyer slides from the queue into the mouth for incineration, we hop onto its hull. The incinerator doors close behind the ship.
"Fast-like. Now," I say,
and we race down the length of the doomed warship and jump off its bow toward the vast aperture that awaits beyond the incinerator to consume the liquid metal the warship will soon become. A wave of heat chases us into the aperture, down its huge umbilical, and into a grim processing center where vast cubic trays wait for the liquid metal. A red foreman in a mech suit turns our way, but we're already gone and into the station through a pedestrian walkway high above.
The Carthii's philosophy of order is simple. They believe in an iron rod of discipline held by a velvet-scented glove. Dockyard workers who obey their Carthii masters are given many delights, including 23 delirium arcades for the pleasure of their coveted greens.
We target an arcade located on the 37th level of the Eastern Construction Spindle. The arcade is thick with humidity, and the lights in the ceiling cast a dim indigo glow over the rows of delirium pods. Our abrupt entry, and the sound the brown janitor's body makes as he hits the floor, draws the attention of the arcade's admin, a tall, androgynous green with a cruel, pale face. They turn from their route through the rows of delirium pods to see a shadow leaping toward them. Cassius takes them down hard with a knee to the sternum. By the time I make it over to them, he's holding their body, now limp, as a wet towel. The shock of the mild collision killed them.
"Sorry," Cassius murmurs. "Not used to this high gravity."
He drops the human towel.
"So fragile.
We're looking for an architect or a Fulgor Bellator. Delta symbol with 3 lightning bolts. Try not to kill them."
We split the pods, and I go down the rows, peering at the blank, pale faces for the right tattoos that will find Sevro's cell and lead me through the doors blocking my path to it.
Hardwired into the experiential pods, the Greens' reveries are replayed through small holograms over their heads. More than half the Greens partake in sexual simulations and are fit with cod pieces to catch the byproduct of their pleasure. I stop and feel my gut churn at the horror bathing the face of a highly decorated Fulgor Bellator, a lightning warrior. A hardy green bred to be paired with grey squads in the field to enslave or neutralize enemy electronics, his body is thicker than most of his colleagues, and his predilections far more gruesome. I wrap my hand around his throat and tear out the wires going into the ports just in front of his ears. His consciousness falls out of its licentious revelry and back into his war-scarred, tech-enhanced body. I strangle him and then break his neck like a sheaf of dry hay. Concerned, Cassius comes over.
"You murderous hypocrite."
His expressionless helmet fixes on the frozen dream above the dead green before he looks away in disgust.
Venusians, he makes a spitting sound.
Found an architect with healthier dreams. I follow him to a slender green woman with narrow eyes and the tattoo of an architect over her right eyebrow. Her delirium is tamer. She flies atop a scaled beast over a gloomy forest lit in green light. The black mountains that surround the forest are jagged enough to have been hewn by a giant with a scythe. Her eyelids flutter as Cassius eases her out of the dream. She starts. Her eyes focus on her new, frightening reality. As she tries to scream, I wrap Bad Lass around her neck and say, "Your life is in your hands. Don't drop it." The green architect does not choose to drop it. She is slight, probably a third of my weight, and so nervous her thin fingers shake on the keys of the hallway terminal. I made her access it manually so I can curb any potential mischief. Cassius keeps a lookout. The Greens program filters through thousands of images. The brigs are filled with prisoners, most of them golds or greys, but no Severo. She widens the search, delving into high security zones until I have her stop on a bleach-white security room. A man lies in the fetal position, clad in a yellow prisoner's jumpsuit, his head encased in a giant wolf helmet. Cassius must hear my heart beat faster.
"Got him?"
he asks, without turning.
"Maybe."
I zoom in on the prisoner's exposed hands until I see a skull tattoo on the back of his left. Still not convinced, I assess the scars on his right hand. They match the one Severo received from Atalantius Cassia war beasts on Earth. I swallow, nervous now that I'm so close. "That's Severo." I check my chronometer. If Ori is on schedule, she'll have landed the Archimedes and finished her spacewalk on the 6th construction spindle by now. Our insurance should be in order. "Let's go get him." With our jam field hiding us from cameras, I put the green on a razor leash and force her to lead us. She unlocks the maintenance lifts to take us as close as we can to get to Severo's prison. Accessing the maintenance crawl spaces, I have Cassius release a Sun Industries spider drone in the ventilation ducts. He guides it via the uplink in his helm until it peers through the vents into the high security block. It crawls in and begins to pump gas from its carry pod. An alarm blares inside, and the greys on duty scramble for their helmets. At the same time, I thrust the green toward the main door controls. Shaking, she hunches over the controls until the door hisses open. I drive my elbow into the back of her head and move in low and fast, just as the spider explodes in stutters of white light. The first grey turns toward the door. He's blind when I spear him through his armor and heart. I lift him up and run with him as a shield. Guns crackle, slugs slam into the grey's armor, but I'm into them, and that's where I do my best killing. Shoving the grey off Bad Lass, I cut at a man holding a rifle and take both his arms off at the elbows. I kick the other way and snap a grey's neck as I catch him under the jaw. I whip another around by his ankles and jerk him down from the level above, retracting the blade and taking his feet off, and then slam the razor into the crest of another grey's helmet. He parts like split wood. I whip at two others to either side of me. The damage to their helmets is superficial, but it buys Cassius time to shoot both greys as he follows behind me.
3 o'clock, I call. Low!
Cassius ducks just as the obsidian's axe sweeps past where his head was moments before. In the same motion, Cassius sweeps his razor over his head in a circle, dividing one of the two charging obsidians at the waist. His blade catches in the armor of the other. He blocks a second axe strike with his aegis, a glowing shield emitted with his left vambrace, and rolls to free his blade. The obsidian's next swing crashes down. The axe sparks against his pulse shield and rebounds. Cassius stabs his razor, two-handed, under the obsidian's armpit, taking his opponent under the jaw. The blade emerges out of the top of the obsidian's helmet. Cassius recalls his blade and cleans it as he stands.
"Clear," he says. "I'll hold here. Get your goblin."
I stumble over the twitching bodies and tear a pass card off a centurion's armor. I race down the security block's main corridor until I reach Severo's door, where I wave the pass card.
The heavy metal retracts upward, and I burst into the cell. Severo lies in the center of the white room. The wolf helmet on his head is so heavy, the act of lifting it from the floor makes the veins in his neck bulge. I race to him, and with a careful swing, cut the lock on the helmet. I sheathe my razor and tear the helmet away. Severo's face is dewy and crusted with dried saliva, dead skin, hair, and yeast. He smells as cheesy as a popped cyst. His eyes blink out at me from the tangle. They are grey. The man has Severo's tattoos, his scars, but he is not Severo.
Help me,
the impostor begs.
Oh, shit.
I drop the impostor.
Cassius! Trap!
Boom! Sound from the hall. Cassius fills the doorway, his rifle shouldered.
Darrow!
He stares at the impostor at my feet.
They've blocked the exit. Two squads at least.
I raise my helmet.
We have to punch through them. It's our only...
Move! I shout as the cell door begins to close with Cassius in its way. Cassius hurls himself into the cell. The door slams down behind him with enough force to crush granite. He rolls to his feet, razor out again.
You idiot! What was that?
I shout.
You said move! The other way! You didn't specify which direction. Who dives into a bloody damn cell?
I snap. Drip. 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 The blood on Bad Lass hits the floor harder with each drop. I feel the unmistakable twinge in my stomach, a leaden weight in the brain and limbs. Gravity. There must be a well under the floor.
We have to get out.
I pull a breaching charge from my thigh pack and toss it to Cassius. The gravity increases exponentially, and the charge falls short. My feet rise with excruciating slowness and descend with a force greater than any horse's kick. My pulse armor is tough. Not top of the line, as I'm accustomed to wearing, but tough and battle-tested. Still, it succumbs to the weight. My knee drives into the floor hard enough to dent it. Cassius keeps his feet. He trudges toward the door with the charge in hand.
Elephant on my gory chest,
Cassius says through gritted teeth. Blood pounds in my head, 10 times the weight it would be on Earth. My heart gallops from the strain of pushing it through my veins. I crash down like an ancient Martian god tree. I land poorly and feel the gold needle fire down my left arm as a nerve pinches in my neck. I lay there wheezing. Cassius burbles something I can't understand. He must not make it to the door. There is no explosion. There is no Severo. Did Apollonius ever have him? I've been played for an utter fool. A voice, too vibrant, too ravening to belong to anyone but Apollonius, comes from a speaker above.
Darrow, 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 truly you are divine, for you have answered my prayers. Welcome to the dockyards of the Minotaur. Welcome to your doom.